across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Hope you enjoyed that tune there by Stevie Ray Vaughan in the background. Officially branded by Luke Mathers as the second best show opening music on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I'm not bitter about that one bit, Mathers. But we'll talk about that again some other time. 6:06 on this Wednesday, April 17th. Another beautiful day to have you here up north, albeit a rainy one. So however you're joining us, terrestrial radio, an app, social media, pod, all these things that weren't in our vocabulary a few years ago, we're glad you're here. So how much rain you got? I can't tell you here because, surprisingly, the guy who keeps making old age jokes about himself has not yet put out his rain gauge for the spring yet. But trust me, it won't be long until I'm greeting you by saying, well, we had 0.73 inches fall here in Lake Wissota. Not there yet. The reports I saw on the television this morning indicated half inch to up to an inch of rain in some places. Hopefully it continues to fall at a helpful level that, you know, takes care of the soil moisture and does not cause too much angst wherever you're driving or working today. If you'd like to join us along the way, tell us what you got for rain. Look, you've got the rain gauge. I don't. We'll take your reports. Text them. Call them here at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. Coming up today, we have our climate check report where Melissa Baldoff joins us along with somebody from Beloit as part of a citizen scientist project to monitor air quality, which is a real challenge in Beloit. And so we'll explain that coming up later this hour. Legislative Republicans have ignored another special session call from Governor Tony Evers, and they continue to hold hostage $125 million to clean up contaminated drinking water in Wisconsin unless they're allowed to limit how polluters are prosecuted. We'll talk to State Representative Tip McGuire from Kenosha, who is a member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. In our second hour, in our homeroom segment, we'll talk to somebody from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. They've put out a new report that has some warnings about the sustainability of Wisconsin's school funding system, because it's a system that relies on voters to make up the difference when hostile politicians in the legislature refuse to provide their share of support for the education of our children. Plus, Todd Alba, Brittany Merlot's forecast, and more. Temperatures around Wisconsin at 6 a.m. look like this. 51 here in Chippewa Falls. Hayward is at 43. Park Falls, 41. Wausau, 46. Green Bay is 51 right now. La Crosse, 59. Wisconsin Rapids comes in at 51, Oshkosh 54, it's 59 in Madison, it's 54 degrees in Waukesha, where we find Greg Bach back on duty after doing doggy daddy duty. I shouldn't say duty with doggy, should I? Anyway, you fulfilled your responsibilities to Mandel. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, everybody. I'm Greg Bach. I'm a guy who's the person sitting in Waukesha. It was a lot of hurry up and wait. I dropped her off, and they're like, all right, we'll call you. You can pick her up at 3. I'm like, oh, well, come on. I'm just going to sit around the house and stew.
Aw.
But so I got a lot of stuff done around the house. And
okay. Basically, this was because Maybell's still a younger dog, this was the snippage that all responsible pet owners should take care of in one form or another.
Yep. So she had her surgery. She had her procedure. And she came home yesterday, and I was very nervous that once I showed back up, she'd come out of there going, like, looking at me like, what did you do to me? You let them hurt me. But she actually came out, and she didn't run because she didn't have the energy. She's still on the anesthetic. But she came walking over me and just plopped down right between my legs and didn't want to go with any. Didn't want to be like, she wanted to be with me. I was like, oh, you still love me.
Well, because I mean, from her standpoint, it's like, you know, she doesn't know anything about the procedure. Just like, wow, that was a really deep nap. Where's my guy? I need to put my head in his lap. This was the weirdest sleep ever.
and ow, and why am I so
and
shaved?
Ow, why am I sore? Why did I wake up in this bathtub full of ice? Where's my kidney? No, it's not quite that.
Pat, come back to us.
I know. That was good for you to do. I haven't looked at a radar yet. Is it raining down by you? I sense it's raining pretty much everywhere.
It's drizzly. Morning. It's not so much like we're not getting right now. It's cloudy. You can tell it's about to pop. Yeah, we should be getting rain probably in the next half an hour.
Okay. All right. And like I said, if this is what we get, this is fine. This is what we need. We've seen a video of grass fires around Wisconsin in various places because it's been so dry and so windy. So this is a perfectly fine development in spring. Like I was saying yesterday, there's not like still 2 feet of snow on the ground where we're like, when is this winter going to end? It's not like that.
If I'm not mistaken, there's a famous phrase that goes with this.
Oh, yeah.
April showers.
Oh, yes.
Means that we get summer sometime in May. It's going to be 90 degrees.
Yeah, that was the original draft. They cleaned it up after that. Checking some of the news headlines today, we are going to talk more about the Joint Finance Committee refusing to show up for work yesterday. And again, keep in mind the legislature, which is run by Republicans, the legislature is on basically a 9-month paid vacation. I mean, they can show up and, you know, open the mail and take some constituent phone calls. But in terms of actual legislation, they've clocked out already, but they're going to get a paycheck for the rest of the year, even though there are still things to be done, including coming to an agreement on how to clean up contaminated drinking water in Wisconsin that's been contaminated by PFAS, these industrial class of chemicals that are man-made. They don't break down in nature. They eventually work their way into the water supply. They get into humans, and some of them cause problems. The legislature last year, when the state budget passed some 287 days ago, theoretically put $125 million in there to take care of PFAS cleanup all around the state. But the legislature found a way to say, well, we're putting that number in the budget, but you have to come to us for every little bit that's released on it, every individual spending request. And in fact, later today, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is going to hear arguments in a somewhat related case about how the legislature is doing this and, you know, whether it's by the book or if they are trying to turn the legislature into something that can not be a co-equal branch of government with the executive branch, but actually supersede the executive branch. It's one thing to have oversight. It's another thing to go beyond, well, basically, what's the phrase? Stay in your lane? To go out of their lane and to say, no, we're going to dictate everything that the executive branch does. So Governor Evers had called a special session of the Joint Finance Committee yesterday to come in and meet and say, look, where are the differences here? How can we bridge them? And Republicans did not show up and again stuck to their talking point where, again, if you're on the conservative side of the fence, you never go wrong bashing the DNR. You just don't. It's a tried and true talking point. You'll always get people going, hurrah, yes, you know, it's the DNR is the heavy hand of big government, jackbooted thugs, whatever you want to call it. You never go wrong politically. That doesn't do a thing to clean up drinking water in Wisconsin. Not a thing. The Department of Natural Resources, you know, the people who know this stuff, again, not the politicians who also apparently know obstetrics and gynecology, and apparently they know everything about how elections work. Now they apparently know, you know, how to enforce chemical pollution in our drinking water. No, it's the DNR who are the experts. And Republicans are saying, well, we're not going to release the money unless you make it harder for the DNR to enforce the law when it comes to polluters. Under the guise of saying, well, they're going to end up penalizing innocent landowners who didn't dump these chemicals. There are already plenty of safeguards in there to avoid it happening. But again, it's a tried and true talking point if you just accuse the DNR. And if you can find just one example, even if it's one in a million or, you know, one in a thousand, you just need that one example to say, well, see, it's all like that. You know, it's why we don't need more agents at the IRS, you know, who would be going after billionaire tax cheats. Oh, no, no, they're going after you. So we don't need that. It's all in that same vein of wanting to starve government in order to advance their own agenda, which in this case involves backing industry, which, again, dumped these chemicals, not necessarily with malice. Again, we're talking about manufacturing that goes back decades, but in places where the cause can be found, and if the polluter is still around, of course they should have to pay a share of that. And Republicans, unfortunately, are looking to let industry off the hook and say, no, taxpayers will have to pay for all of this as it comes up, and we don't want the enforcement on the manufacturers. And that's where the standoff is. And so while I said it's always a winning talking point for Republicans to bash the DNR, it's going to be less of a talking point, less of a winning talking point, if the point is less about bashing the DNR and more about, okay, but our water's still polluted. What are you doing about it? And the bashing DNR thing only takes you so far before they say, okay, fine, then let's work around it. What else you got? And right now, all they got is staying home, collecting a paycheck, putting out press releases, and not much more than that. And in our next hour, we'll talk to Tim McGuire from Kenosha State Assembly Rep, who's on the Joint Finance Committee, and hear more from him about, you know, yesterday's no-show by Republicans and what he has to say about some of the Republican talking points, and get at just the notion of, we need to get to work. We need to get to work. The water is still polluted and still is going to be a threat. And we need to get people coming together to take care of this very real problem for Wisconsinites. In sports, the Padres beat the Brewers 6-3 last night. The Brewers had 6 hits. Sal Frelick had 3 of them. William Contreras drove in 2 runs in the losing effort. Now, for the Brewers, it was only their very first series loss of the season, and they're going to try to avoid a 3-game sweep coming up this afternoon. You can start listening at 11:35 this morning on News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country. And that'll be to hear the Brewers play the Padres coming up this afternoon before they get on the road for St. Louis. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this rainy Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back in just a bit.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day.
Today's history lesson comes up in about 30 minutes, and it was on this day in 1971. The Beatles had been broken up for about a year, and a year later, all 4 Beatles were on the charts at the very same time with singles of their own, each one going their own way. And we'll find out more about what those tunes were and more history coming up a little bit later this morning. Senate candidate Eric Hovde is continuing to get heat for a crack he made about nursing home residents and how much of a priority should be made in helping them vote safely. It's even attracted the attention of frequent blogger and former Milwaukee Bucks superstar Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who has a very widely read blog or Substack newsletter in which he slams Hovde for recent comments that suggest that, you know, nursing home residents are not really qualified to vote. The longtime MVP said, other than the basic lack of humanity, Hovde shows a basic lack of critical thinking skills. He says things, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar does, in the essay, such as, but what's troubling here is his desire to take away the rights of people who have spent a lifetime contributing to this country based on a physical attribute, age. That's the basis of racism, sexism, and pretty much all the bad isms. He talks about the potential for fraud in nursing homes, but offers no evidence other than Trump's favorite form of proof, which is hearsay. You know, I hear that, dot, dot, dot. But Kareem goes on to say, you know, is this a guy who should be senator? And I've been watching as various Republicans and talk show hosts, their defense continues to be, he didn't say that, and you're making a mountain out of a molehill, or you're purposefully twisting his words. We've played his words before. You don't need us to say this is what he said. You can listen to the words that he says. And the tone in his voice when he says, quote, if you're in a nursing home, you only have 5-6 months life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote. That did not sit well, not only with nursing home residents, but with, you know, their families by and large. Were there a couple of family members who probably didn't like the way mom or dad was voting and didn't like that they got assistance in a nursing home? Sure. But by and large, that hardly strikes me as the kind of talking point that's really going to take you through a Senate campaign. And yet he continues to get some national attention for that. The trial of Donald Trump continues in Manhattan, and 7 jurors have been chosen so far for the election interference hush money trial. But amazingly enough, Trump is unhappy with the efficiency at which jurors are being chosen. Now, there was some speculation, some concern that, you know, maybe it would take a long time to find jurors, potential jurors, who would say, yes, they could be impartial, they could keep an open mind. Both sides have, you know, attorney challenges where they can dismiss people. And yet, despite that, they did find the first 7. They want to find 12 jurors and 6 alternates. And so it's come along nicely. The judge in the case has told the first 7 to be prepared for opening arguments to begin as early as next Monday. So what did Trump do? He went outside the courtroom, which is going to be, that's going to be his thing now, is because he's got to be in court every day during this trial. So it also means every day he's going to get some national attention by coming out and making a statement basically unchallenged, because it's not a real news conference. He's walking out of the courtroom. The reporters are kind of barricaded off. So he's going to say something and then he's going to walk off and not really have it challenged. Kind of like the other day when he said, the judge said that he couldn't go to his son Bannon's high school graduation, when the judge said nothing of the sort. And by the way, Trump hadn't gone to the high school graduation of his first 4 kids. What makes us think the 5th one wouldn't be anything other than a matter of convenience because of the courts. But anyway, he stopped in the hallway yesterday to rail against the case to reporters. And he accused Judge Juan Merchan of, quote, rushing the trial. He says, we are going to continue our fight against this judge who pushed unsuccessfully to have Merchan removed from the case. Again, this is how an efficient court works. In not every case can Trump have a judge like Eileen Cannon with the Mar-a-Lago documents case, which arguably is the strongest of the 4 criminal cases against Trump. Arguably, if the evidence shows he could have been sentenced and convicted on anything at this point, it's all those boxes of national security secrets that were stored in a bathroom, stored on a theater stage, you know, in hallways and closets. That should have been done. But Judge Eileen Cannon, a new judge appointed by Trump with very little experience, has been slow walking this case at a criminal pace. Just frankly, it's criminal the way that she has allowed a case involving national security to just drag along. But Trump is enjoying the delay that comes with that. He's got a U.S. Supreme Court that is helping him slow walk the other case, the federal case against him, where he's claiming, you know, total presidential immunity. In other words, that he's a monarch and that there's no way to hold him accountable. And then the Georgia election interference case, of course, got sidetracked with the salacious accusations that were made against the district attorney there. So this one case of falsifying business records to such a degree that felony criminal charges are warranted because he tried to hide from the voters the hush money payments that he made and the catch and kill campaign that he was a part of to keep stories of his affairs and his alleged affairs secret. Because that case is actually moving efficiently, he's unhappy about that and continues to use rhetoric that indicates a willingness to encourage the same kind of behavior that we were seeing prior to January 6th, before everything exploded on the grounds of the U.S. Capitol. Well, it gets worse. Because in Arizona, you have a candidate for U.S. Senate in Carrie Lake, who ran for governor and lost, continues to insist that she won, and told supporters over the weekend to maybe strap on a Glock just in case. The Arizona Republican candidate for Senate said, quote, "We are going to put on the armor of God and maybe strap on a Glock on the side just in case." Again, the continued denials, and that's just some of what she's had to say. Some of the other things that she's had to say, are racist. They are encouraging of violence and antithetical to democracy. And Trump is doing nothing to dissuade that kind of talk from continuing to spread. We'll pause here, and when we come back, we have this week's Climate Check, Melissa Baldoff and a guest from Beloit talking about monitoring the air for future cleanup efforts. That's coming up next. You're up north. It's electric! And we're back on Up North News Radio. Time for our weekly Climate Check with Melissa Baldoff. And picking up on a topic we talked about last week and going a little further with somebody very involved in seeing the day when there's better air quality around the area of Beloit. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. We've got Brittany Keys with us. We talked a bit about what all folks have been doing in Beloit to monitor air quality since that time. A study has come out that really lays out in stark terms the challenge ahead to clean up the air around Beloit and the health problems that can come from it as well, Melissa. So like you put it, we kind of set the stage last week, and we can get a little bit deeper into things with our guest today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have Brittany join us to talk about this issue. Because like we talked about last week, there was really, power from this, group of citizen scientists who came together, and we know we've always seen that kind of great work and advocacy from our friends at Healthy Climate Wisconsin, which Brittany works closely with. So I'm really excited to welcome Brittany Keys to the show this morning and talk a little bit more about, what folks were seeing in Beloit that really kind of led you and others to, come together and be able to collect this data that will, arm folks to really make some change.
Yeah, Brittany, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. And so, Melissa, to your question of what started the Citizen Science Project, it was really two big things. And the first was, we're historically a industrial community, and the industries that pollute have to report emissions to the EPA. And so looking at the reported emissions by the industries, we're able to see what is happening in Rock County. And it was the trends from 2010 to the present. So specifically starting in 2017, 2019 to the last accessible data 2022, Rock County has seen a skyrocket kind of trend upward in the reported greenhouse gas emissions to the EPA. And with that, we do know that that's often an underreporting. And with the reported emissions, we looked at our public health data, and we have amongst the highest childhood asthma rates and hospitalizations in the state. So that was the first thing to bring some concern to us. And the second thing is looking at the monitoring that the DNR currently does. We found that in Rock County, there was a big concern of under monitoring to no monitoring happening. And so if you're not monitoring something, you're not able to identify it and to then address it. So that's where we found a role and a need for the community science project.
So you did work to get these monitors, because what had been, I thought it was just one monitor once upon a time. How many monitors were eventually in use around the area?
Yeah, so the DNR has one ozone monitor on the far west side of Beloit, which is only run seasonal, and the location likely is not ideal for capturing local pollution. So what we were able to do is, per the DNR recommendation, is seek out an EPA loan program, and we were able to get 6 monitors up throughout Beloit, partnering with local schools, service providers, and then for an initial 6-month period, and then that was granted an extension given the concerning results we were finding. We were able to appreciate what the particulate matter air pollution was and the trends across the city.
Is, I think, really remarkable to, you know, think about how many other communities might be experiencing the same thing. You know, if we know that there's this under monitoring and under reporting in Beloit, you know, this could be happening in communities all across Wisconsin. So I think that this is, you know, not only a great opportunity for this community to learn more, but it seems like a great opportunity for other communities to kind of, you know, have a model for what to do when it comes to this kind of pollution, because we know that it's incredibly dangerous. And, you know, I wonder if you could also just talk a little bit more and I think remind our listeners here about why this kind of pollution is so dangerous.
Absolutely. So particulate matter air pollution, one of the main pollutants from burning fossil fuels, which you will find with burning gas for transportation, energy production, and industry, it has negative impacts throughout the lifespan. And so often this small pollutant we can inhale, it can be absorbed in the bloodstream and then find like an end home in almost all organs in the body. And through that process, it can cause negative respiratory conditions. So one of the first things you'll see is increased asthma hospitalizations, asthma attacks in youth. But then it also contributes to increased heart attacks, strokes, neurodegenerative conditions, increased incidence of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and some very concerning data is finding particulate matter in placental tissue and associating that with low birth weights and poor birth outcomes, as well as impaired learning and cognitive function as the children age.
So you did the monitoring, and obviously you wanted data. You wanted to, you know, try to figure out, you know, the path to a solution is to understand, you know, the scope of the problem. But in the interim comes this headline from a 2023 World Air Quality Report by a Swiss company, IQ Air. And you see the headlines of Beloit having some of the worst levels of regional city air pollution among the U.S. and even among North America, that its quality is low. Did that help bring attention to the scope of the problem, or did it in some ways lead to pushback from people saying, well, why are we hearing and seeing these negative headlines about our town?
I would say yes and yes. I've seen a lot of discussion around air quality, air pollution, engagement with the air quality monitoring sites, like levels I've never seen before. And so I'm really, I feel that is a huge positive, educating and empowering just members of our community to know where to look and how to interpret that real-time data. But then at the same time, there has been some negative pushback, which is understandable because that is not a great title to have. And one of the things that I really thought of is something Melissa touched on, and that's we identify this in Beloit because this community science project started monitoring, and how many communities are likely breathing very polluted air, but just are not monitoring. Does Beloit really hold the title? I don't think we can say, because many places aren't monitoring, but we clearly have identified a problem that I hope we can work together to address.
Okay, but now comes the part that I can hear people, almost yelling at their radios, like, okay, so who? It's like a whodunit. It's like, okay, do we know? We've talked about how there's a lot of industry around Beloit, but do we know that there are, certain places that are contributing to the problem more than others? Not just to point fingers, but I've got to think there's some companies and industries out there that don't want to be lumped in if they feel like, their emissions are not a cause of the problem.
Sure, that's a great question. I mean, we know the main contributors to air pollution are transportation, burning gas for energy, and industry, right? And we also have the resource of what industry reports to the EPA. Our research project did not determine directionality or source. We just were able to identify that there is a problem that is concerning and impacting public health.
And, another thing I thought was so, stark with this, and this is something that, Pat and I have talked about many times on the show, is, the way that this kind of pollution is disproportionately harmful to certain communities and, communities with high populations of folks who are low income, who are elderly, and who are people of color. Is that something that you're, hearing, specific concern from people in the community that, hey, we are feeling this in a deeper way? Is that something people are talking about?
That historically has absolutely been a trend, that higher polluting industry does tend to settle in areas, communities that are more vulnerable and potentially less ability to push back against that. And I would say that Beloit is experiencing an issue of environmental justice. We are a wonderfully and beautifully diverse community, but we do have higher levels of poverty. We have other environmental exposures with higher levels of lead lines, so higher lead exposure for our kids. And our youth, the percentage that come from a disadvantaged background is over 70% in our public schools. So that is, I think that this definitely is an environmental justice issue.
It is, but it's also an economic issue in this way. People are going to say, well, wait, is the only solution to this that you have to close some places down, and that's going to cost jobs, and that's just going to exacerbate, income inequities and make things worse for people who'd been working in these plants? Or are there ways that they can, mitigate and take corrective action? What are you hoping is the best path forward for the entire community, not just from the health standpoint, but from the economy as well?
Absolutely. So the exciting part is that the technology is there to offer for clean energy solutions and to help industry clean up the pollution. So what I hope for is a large collaborative partnership between the private and public sector to really work together, because I think it benefits all of us. And when you say this is an economic issue. I agree, because looking at recruiting and retaining families to the area and to work for these terrific companies, right? This is a big deal. Families want to come to places that have clean and safe air. So this is an economic issue that I believe would benefit industry to partner with, and then really continue to set the roadmap of how communities respond when you get this news after you start monitoring.
So with that, I'll take the final question over to Melissa then. From a political standpoint, is there a path forward that involves, I would say it involves carrots and sticks, that you can't do it with incentives alone, but also just, you know, one size fits all government regulation isn't going to do the trick either. It's almost the way we're looking at, you know, broadband and some of the other things, is that you have to have a sense of partnership in this. Do you see that can still be done, Melissa, in a state like Wisconsin for a community like Beloit?
I do think so. I think that we saw an example of that just recently when we saw a number of the state's largest utilities come together and commit to using union labor for their clean energy projects. So I think that there are opportunities when people are willing to come together. I think that it is going to take, I would say, some compromise, which is probably not the right word. I think it's got to be that political will from the Republicans who have stood in the way of progress time after time. So with fair maps on the horizon for us and a chance at a legislature that really truly represents the will of the people, I think that the voices of people in communities like Beloit are going to really, really be heard. And I think that what they're going to say is, you got to do something here. We're sick. We need help. Yeah. Our kids are going to the hospital. We got to get something done here. So I do think that it's possible.
You got to do it for the kids, if nothing else here. Brittany Keyes is with Healthy Climate Wisconsin and a former city councilor in Beloit and a true leader in helping what's going to be a long-range project to make the air cleaner and better in your community. Brittany, thank you so much. It was great to talk to you today.
Yes, thank you.
All right, Melissa, thanks as well. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good.
And we'll have more after this. You're up north. Jeremiah, since the song came out.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog, was a good friend of mine.
I mean, talk about setting yourself up to be teased. This little ditty from Three Dog Night hit number one this day in 1971. It would stay at the top of the charts for 6 weeks. Welcome back to Up North News Radio and today's history lesson, and it's Wednesday. So we've got Melissa Kay here from locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning.
Our network's thespian.
Oh, yes. The
network. One of. There's quite a few of us.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Selena Heller, big time. Yep.
A radio network full of theater kids. Go on.
I know. Right? I am so shocked. Shocked to hear that there are extroverts among us here. How was that storm by you? I mean, it was pretty loud here when it rumbled through.
Yeah, it wasn't loud. It was bright. We had a lot of lightning strikes.
Wow.
I had like 15 notices from the Wood County Communications Center of lightning reported within 5 miles of your location.
Yeah, there was a lot of cloud to ground action here last night. Yep. And just like I said, it was particularly noticeable. But thankfully, you know, nothing severe came out of it around here. Turning back to the music today, Jan Hammer, the pianist, composer, producer from Czechoslovakia, turns 76 years old today. He's had many TV themes over the years, none more famous than this one. I was not a Miami Vice regular viewer. Either of you get into Crockett and Tubbs?
No.
No, I was a little too young. It was Too dramatic.
Which also means that you were too young for the styles then, the all pastel, you know, Miami Beach kind of styles.
I once heard someone say ice cream colored t-shirts with sport jackets with the arms pushed up.
Yes. Yep. That was exactly it. And when and it was during that time in their heyday when Sherry and I were planning our wedding. And of course, back then you had to order everything from catalogs, there being no internet.
So we go look at
the catalogs. And along with all the black tuxes and all the charcoal gray tuxes, maybe some baby blue tuxes. Then you get to the Miami Vice collection, and you could have all your groomsmen in all these different pastel colored tuxes.
Oh, pretty.
Oh, so pretty.
And
so
those colors dated. Those colors have survived for the women's dresses over the years too.
Yes, they have, sadly.
I know. Yeah,
hey, at that, it was probably around that time that I had a matching sweatsuit. Sweatshirt and pants. I'm pretty sure they were pink or purple and with a kitty on it. It was my favorite outfit. Aww. I had to wear it every day.
Nice.
I was probably seven.
For music nerds out there, if you want to listen to some really good Jan Hammer, his work with the Mahavishnu Orchestra back in the 70s was amazing.
Yeah, you said pianist and then that started playing. I was a little confused.
Well, you know, you
got
to start.
That sounds more my style, Greg.
You got to start somewhere. All right. All of you are going to do the dance, at least in your head, when I tell you that Michael Sambello is 69 years old today. Here's Guess the Movie. Now you're either imagining yourself doing the dance, no, where your feet are moving and you're twirling around in a circle, or you're picturing Chris Farley do it in Tommy Boy when he's getting hosed down.
I was gonna say, is this the chair with the water?
This is the chair with the water from Flashdance. Yes. Okay.
Trust me, I'm thinking of Jennifer Beals right now. Who, by the way, does not look like
Chris Farley's a close second.
Yes. If you see Jennifer Beals today, she looks like she's barely aged.
I know. Yeah. Good on her.
Barely
dancing. Yeah, it's good exercise. The failed Bay of Pigs invasion, where Cuban exiles financed and trained by the CIA, that occurred on this day in 1961, failing to oust Fidel Castro from Cuba. The ill-fated Apollo 13 returned to Earth safely on this day in 1970. Actress Jennifer Garner is 52 today.
Wow.
Victoria Beckham, Posh Spice, one of the Spice Girls, turns 50 years old today. And happy 57th birthday to indie rock icon Liz Phair. But this is just the beginning. We're already wet and we're gonna go
swimming. Why can't I breathe with I'm glad you found the clean version, because, man, she makes some dirty songs.
Yeah, she does. It was like the first or second day that we were doing the show, and I was doing the music segment, and Luke Mathers was producing that day, and he says, little note here, Pat, you be sure when you do the Google searches for these clips, you put in like clean version or radio edit. And then I went and listened to the whole clip that I'd put up there. I'm like, oh yeah, that would have got kicked us off the radio real quick. So yeah, got to be careful for those things. And then I noted before that each of the four Beatles had a solo single on the charts this day in 1971. What did we earlier? We played Paul McCartney's Another Day.
Yep.
There was also, we'll hear later from Ringo Starr, It Don't Come Easy, George Harrison, My Sweet Lord. And then this was John Lennon's contribution to your AM radios this day in 1971. I can confirm this because when cleaning out my garage over the weekend, one of the stations I was listening to was playing one of those old Casey Kasem episodes of American Top 40. And up it came, like, here's a new debut from John Lennon, Power to the People, from this day in 1971. This is National Malbec Day, if that's the kind of wine you prefer. Oh, look how
Malbec.
Melissa's face lit up. We have connected here.
Well, you can't get it everywhere. It's not as common.
Yes, and I'm not, I'm really not a wine drinker, but that is definitely one, that, that's one that I do enjoy. It's National Bananas Day. It's National Cheese Ball Day.
Okay.
I've never gotten into the
cheese
ball.
The actual cheese ball, or yeah. Cheese balls in the big tub?
No, not the snack food.
Oh, man.
Made of cornmeal and death. It's
they're so good.
It's National Haiku Day. I did not write a haiku for the occasion. I'm sorry. It's National Herbalist Day. National Ford Mustang Day. National Bats Day, the animal, not the sport implement.
Well,
and National
good.
Kickball Day. And I played thousands of games of kickball as a kid back in the day. Melissa, left you again, like 10 seconds to tell us what's new at Locally Grown Radio.
Well, we have an exciting Midday Magazine today. Our outgoing mayor and our incoming mayor, Mayor Shane Blazer, is on his way out. And our new mayor, Matt Zacher, is on his way in. So they're going to come and talk with James today.
That is going
to
be
3 to 4.
That's going to be really good. If anybody interested in the news there needs to tune in.
Absolutely.
That sounds like a great handoff. Thank you, Melissa. Have a wonderful day.
Good to see you guys. Have a great day.
You bet.
Stay
a very
safe.
Busy second hour of Up North News Radio is coming up in just a bit. You're up north.